A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 310. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Whoops Apocalypse. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're looking again at this satirical look at Cold War politics from ITV in 1982. It ran for 6 episodes. Typically for ITV, they're about 25 minutes in the half-hour slot, allowing for commercials. And it is, should we say, some slapstick and broad humour, throwing a lot of stuff at very thinly disguised versions of well-known political figures of the time and seeing what sticks. That perhaps sort of sums up the feel of Whoops Apocalypse, maybe, Brian.
I think so, yes. So the 1980s were sort of prime time for society's fear about nuclear war, and they were also a time that we would see a lot of coverage of those ideas on television and in other media. And Whoops Apocalypse in 1982 was a little on the early side in some ways.
Yes, it was, which is interesting in the timing, because if we consider the shows about nuclear war or nuclear power that we have considered, Threads, which was extremely memorable and extremely disturbing, was broadcast in 1984. Peter Watkins' The War Game, which was, of course, was a 1965 film, but wasn't actually broadcast on British television by the BBC until 1985.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, despite the fact that the BBC had commissioned it in the 60s. And of course, 85 is the same year for a very grim and serious look at nuclear power in Edge of Darkness. So Whoops Apocalypse beats all those by a couple of years. And of course, those shows were all extremely serious and grim. And I guess we can't say that about Whoops Apocalypse at all, Brian.
That's right. It's very broad television humor from the early 1980s and feels like something that might come from a sketch comedy show in some ways. It has a bit of the feeling of some of the North American shows from that era, like Saturday Night Live and SCTV, and also in some ways some the feeling of British comedy shows and influence from Monty Python type stuff and so on.
Yes, lots of stuff going on. As you say, it's almost like sketch comedy in a way, as we keep jumping between the three centres of power, and I suppose the fourth location being the Shah on the ferry with his servant, and then of course wherever an acrobat turns up in the world. And it all does get very strange, you know, President Cyclops, the ever-changing Soviet premier, and of course Prime Minister Pork just getting more and more Superman until a scene towards the end of the series, which is full-on DC Comics, isn't it, Brian?
It really is. And we have this rather large group of well-known actors playing a variety of nationalities in pretty stereotypical ways, which sometimes is not too bad, and sometimes the portrayals are, well, not great.
Yes, I mean, it is tricky looking back at a show from 1982. And we will come to this later on, that, you know, comedy television on television was a different beast then. And I suppose, you know, we talked in the last episode briefly about the fact that there's a laughter track, which feels a bit strange and jarring to our modern ears. And of course, as you say, Brian, there is a lot of it that is really just offensive in a way. I suppose what we can say is it's equally offensive to everybody.
There is a bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, races, religions, genders, sexualities. It's an equal opportunities offender in a way. But we'll come back to that in a moment.
Yes, absolutely. We should look at some of the spin-offs that came from this, because it's interesting what came along after the series.
Yes, I hadn't realized until I started reading all the detailed notes on the DVDs quite how popular Whoops Apocalypse was at the time, because we know there was a tie-in book, which I wasn't previously aware of, called Whoops Apocalypse, A State of the World Report, written by the writers Andrew Marshall and David Renwick, and made to look like a newspaper supplement of the time about the characters and situations from the series. We haven't tracked down a copy of the book, although it is out there on the marketplace, secondhand copies, I think, Brian.
Yes, there certainly are some.
Perhaps slightly more, you know, interested in a positive note about it, that in 1983, so a year after this show, there was a big charity stage show in London featuring popular actors and singers and comedians of the time doing songs, monologues and sketches, all with an anti-war theme. The show was called The Big One, and it included two pieces written by Marshall and Renwick, but this time performed by Paul Eddington, the actor from Yes Minister, as the defence secretary, with Anton Rogers playing the Russian Premier Chernenko. So we don't know really too much about the sketches, but I guess, you know, it was a big anti-war show. So, you know, presumably something not unlike The Secret Policeman's Ball, which I guess is from a similar time period, Brian?
Yeah, similar time period for sure. And yeah, it would be interesting to know a bit more about that that stage production and how these pieces fit into it.
Because with The Secret Policeman's Ball, because obviously John Cleese, you know, he shares both Whoops Apocalypse and The Secret Policeman's Ball. And of course, the video of that survives. You can still watch that show. And it does include some of the classic British comedy sketches in there. So it's great stuff.
Yeah, the Secret Policeman's Ball series of shows were sort of Monty Python without being Monty Python. They'd have most of them there, but they'd be missing one or two. It was that sort of thing. And doing a lot of Monty Python sketches.
And that was for Amnesty International, I believe.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure about those details. It's been quite some time since I've looked at them.
I think that was an Amnesty charity show, yeah. But of course, as well as a book and a stage, some stage sketches, there was also another big spin-off from the series.
Yes, in 1986, Andrew Marshall and David Renwick completely rewrote Whoops Apocalypse for a theatrical movie, and it was in cinemas in 1986. And that was directed by Tom Bussman and starred Peter Cook as the British Prime Minister and Loretta Swit from MASH as the US President. So these were quite different versions of the Prime Minister and the President from what we saw in the TV production. And that movie is on the network DVD release along with the TV series that we've been looking at.
And it's an interesting movie. It, as you say, Brian, it completely changes the plot in a way. Things have moved on from 1982 to 1986. So instead of the Middle East being the sort of conflagration that's going to set off the war, in the film version, it's a foreign country invading a small British principality, not unlike the situation of the Falklands War. And that seems to be the events that sets things off. And it's got, again, like the series, it's got an impressive cast list in the film, because it features not only Ed Bishop, it features Shane Rimmer as well, Brian.
It does, yes.
And Rick Mayall, who's in both the series and the film version. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. It's, you know, a another star-studded cast. A lot of them playing different roles than they did in the TV show.
Yes, that's right, for sure. And the characters, some of them certainly are quite different from what they were in the TV version. So in many ways, it's a rewrite and a complete sort of rethink of what Whoops Apocalypse is, and quite a different take.
Yes, the British Prime Minister, played by Peter Cook, is is mad, but he's mad in a completely different way to Kevin Pork with his delusions of being Superman.
Yes, for sure.
And as well as the film, the book, and some stage stuff, Wikipedia mentions an American TV show, short-lived, apparently not very good. 1992, Fox TV produced a series called Whoops! With an exclamation mark, which was a post-apocalyptic sort of mankind struggling after the nuclear war. So was it in some ways a sequel to Whoops Apocalypse? I don't think officially it was, but it's certainly mentioned sometimes in the same breath.
Yes, indeed. So interesting and wide variety of things that followed along after the TV serial. So we should talk about some of our own thoughts about this show, and a little more than we already have, and review it a little bit, which will involve some unpacking, I think. So what did you like about Whoops Apocalypse?
Well, let's start with the impressive cast. Both actors and comedians, both in the TV show and in the film, perhaps not giving their absolutely finest work. You know, I think most of them are better remembered for other shows. But, you know, it's certainly, I mean, when you get people like Peter Jones, Richard Griffiths, John Barron, then you add in some comedians like John Cleese, Alexis Sale, Rick Mayall, and so on. And plus some great turns by people like Jeffrey Palmer.
Yes.
You know, he's a marvelous actor.
And not someone we associate with comedy normally. At least not this style of comedy.
Not this sort of slapstick style of comedy. If you've ever wondered what Jeffrey Palmer would look like in DC Comics Hulkman costume, then this is the show for you.
Yes, this is a show of... And I've mentioned earlier in our last episode that it's a bit like sketch comedy. And I think it is, because we have sort of several different groups of characters that don't really interact with each other. And they sort of relate to each other in the story a little bit. But it seems like we get the sketches with the American president and his team, and then with the British prime minister and that group of characters. And then with the Shah of Iran and his servant, and then there's the grouping with the Russians and the American tourists, and then you have Black Rabat and his thing traveling around Europe. So it feels like we're getting these different series of comedy sketches that are sort of connected together by what's going on, and connected together by the Ed Bishop news reports, which are like another little line of comedy sketches there that help to sew things together.
Yes, you're quite right, Brian. It does zip around the world, backwards and forwards between these different locations and these groups of people who rarely interact with the others. And of course, you know, some of the settings and characters are perhaps less entertaining than others. But I have to join you in say, you know, praising Ed Bishop, because his zippy newsreader, Jay Garrick, which I think is another DC Comics nod, the name, but his newsreader is splendid and sort of, you know, one of the highlights of this show, I think.
Yes, that's something that works well in it. I think the stuff with the British Prime Minister, Prime Minister Pork and his two cabinet members, and it's just the three of them doing these sketches that get more and more bizarre and insane as the show goes on. I think that line of things worked very well, and it goes into the DC Comics stuff more and more, into some quite deep cut kinds of things that at that time you probably needed to know the comics to know about them. Maybe some of it in animation, but it was really getting into the comics there.
Yeah. Somebody in the team was a DC Comics fan and reader for sure. So, Brian, we've mentioned, you know, the cast and some of the great performances and some of the others. What about yourself? What did you like about Whoops Apocalypse?
Well, I think I definitely liked the Ed Bishop news reporter strand of things that would have these very odd and bizarre things being delivered in a deadpan newsreader type of thing. I thought that worked very well. I also liked the British Prime Minister, as I mentioned, and that sort of team of three of them that sort of starts as these dignified British cabinet conversations and gradually devolves into these three actors wearing DC Comics costumes and getting into all sorts of strange things running around the office. And then Lacrobat, that was, you know, very silly in a lot of ways, but I enjoyed that just in the bizarre, zany John Cleese performance you get.
Okay. I did struggle a little bit with John Cleese myself. I didn't find this peak Cleese.
No, I don't think it is, but I found it fun.
Okay, good. What else about the show? So we've mentioned, obviously, the performances, the sketch nature of it, some of the actors who stand out for the right reasons. The sort of look and feel of the show, it is quite sort of 80s looking. There's quite a bit of, I don't know, the scenery and backdrops are a little bit rickety, aren't they?
It's very much a studio look to it, and it looks like something that was done, you know, a very ambitious thing with lots of different locations and characters, and it looks like it could have been somewhat of a rushed production, but I think for what it is and for what they're doing, you know, it's not about that. So I think it works reasonably well in terms of the look and the feel of it. And they do keep things moving in each one of those sketches, as we're calling them. They're all quite quick. They do keep the pace up, and it's all about the comedy and the satirical stuff and these performances. So yeah, on that level of the look and feel and certainly the pacing, I think it works pretty well.
Okay. What about, you know, turning to the sort of the cons column, the negatives about this show? Let me ask about the laughter track to start with, Brian. Does that cause you a problem on these earlier comedy shows?
Well, it's not great. It was sometimes a little much. Sometimes it can work well. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it being used here.
No, I am the same. And of course, it does feel a bit jarring now, having it. But there you go. It was, you know, goodness knows how long laughter tracks ran. They probably started sometime in 50s TV, I should imagine. Certainly, it was an ever-present feature for years and years.
Yes, and it's sort of come out of style and into style and been used in different types of shows at various times. But I think there was something that was more annoying and problematic to look at in this. And that was the sequences on the cross-channel ferry with the Shah of Iran and his servant, which, you know, it certainly is quite racist. I think we have to say that. But I don't think it works that well. And it's very repetitive. And, you know, I would have liked them to move past the sort of repeating jokes that they were using. You know, they were maybe worth it for the sketches in one episode's worth, but not six episodes worth.
Yes, it is unfortunate whenever we go back to that uncomfortable ferry and the toilets where they seem to spend most of their time. And as you say, they basically just have the two jokes about the blind servant and about the various different expressions he uses to describe his illustrious boss. And of course, it's two white actors, I think, wearing brown makeup as well.
Yes, yes, it is.
Is, you know, now looks terribly, let's just say, unfortunate, if not, as you say, downright racist and offensive. And of course, it's just not funny. You know, it keeps going on and on and on. They throw in on those various scenes, they throw in some sexism and homophobia as well. And it's just, it's none of it is funny, those particular ferry scenes at all.
Yeah. And linking up to that, and you're mentioning the homophobic elements, it was kind of cool to see that they had a gay, I think he was an admiral in the Navy. They had this high ranking character who was clearly portrayed as being competent, who was this gay character. here, but then they use him as a comedy gag about him inviting basically any one of his sailors in his command to join him in his quarters. So it was almost like something that was so close to being something pretty good that just falls apart in an, I think, ill-thought-out comedy recurring gag, I guess.
Is that the Ian Richardson character in the movie version, Brian?
Yes, and in the movie version, I thought it worked better. There was a little bit of that in the movie version, but at least in the movie version, he was more than just a comedy gag in an episode or two. He was more of an important character in it.
Yes.
And it was Ian Richardson, so that helps as well.
Yeah, Ian Richardson. So another Gormenghast connection in the movie version. And yeah, he's playing a character who seems to be in a sort of just straightforward gay relation. And it's not really used for humor at all. It's just shown as part of their life. And I thought that was quite positive.
It was, yeah.
And much better done in that particular version than in the TV show. Yeah. Okay, let's turn to the film then for a moment and just say, you know, what did you think about that? Because it's a completely different version of the plot, obviously, using different characters and a different inciting events. It's got, again, another impressive cast for a film.
Yeah, and I think there were some things that worked much better in it. I think the Loretta Swit version of the American president was good. She was good in it. Where something I didn't mention with the series, the president played by Barry Morse, it's sort of an instance of the well-known thing where Americans and the British in their TV shows portray each other in less than positive ways. And the Barry Morse TV version of the American president, you know, was portrayed as an idiot, basically. And some of that was funny, but it got old pretty quickly, I thought. Where in On the Order of Half the Time and not doing the same kinds of gags, this take on the American president in the film, I liked better.
Yes, it's interesting because she's the vice president who becomes president when the president, who was some form of originally a circus clown who became president, dies right at the start of the film. So they make the jokes about the sort of dead president. They don't make the jokes about Loretta Swit, who's actually shown as being quite a competent female president. And again, they don't make any sort of bones or comedy out of the fact that she's a female president. So that works better. The British Prime Minister continues to be, in fact, if anything, more deranged in the Peter Cook version.
Yeah, the Peter Cook version, it was okay. It was done well. You had Peter Cook there, so that's definitely an asset. I did miss the British Prime Minister and Cabinet from the TV version. I thought they worked really well in that, and it was just ridiculous, and that was great. It worked okay in the film version, but I missed what we had from Peter Jones, Jeffrey Palmer, and Richard Davis. So that was something that worked well in the series, but not bad in the film.
Got a feeling Richard Davis might have been in Robert's Robots. You know, I like to find connections, but I think he might have been one of the spies in Robert's Robots.
Yes, I believe that's right.
Okay, so, you know, yes, the film does lack the wonders of the British cabinet scenes in the TV show. Yeah, okay, but it perhaps plays down on some of the unfortunate sexism and homophobia that appears in the TV version. And I think, am I right, veteran actor Herbert Lom from the Clouseau films is in the movie version.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I thought in the movie that, we may disagree on this, but I thought in the movie L'Acrobat did not work as well as the John Cleese version. He was all right, but he wasn't John Cleese.
It's different in the film version. I just don't like the character L'Acrobat at all. I just don't think it works. I don't think all the silly disguises does much, but there you go. I'm just thinking about it, actually. The other thing I noted, I'm sorry to keep making all these connections, Brian, but I'm going to connect it to another one of your podcasts. The other thing I noticed in one of the Lacrobat scenes in the movie version is we have an American sheriff. And is it Sheriff J.D. Pepper from the Bond, the Roger Moore Bond movies?
Sergeant J.W. Pepper, I think so. It was, if it wasn't the same actor, it was very close.
No, it is the same actor.
It was pretty much that character borrowed from the 1970s Bond films from a number of years earlier, yes.
And as we speak, you've just completed your second season of Hooked on Bond, completing the Roger Moore years. So, you know, for more details, see Hooked on Bond.
Yes, absolutely.
So what else to say about Whoops Apocalypse on TV? It's speculative fiction, obviously, rather than, I suppose, a hard science fiction show. It is comedy, and how many times do we all say this? It's very difficult to do comedy. We have those twin pinnacles in British science fiction comedy of Red Dwarf and The Hitchhiker's Guide, I guess, Brian.
It's very hard to come close to those in science fiction. It really is.
It is, absolutely, to come anywhere near those two series. And unfortunately, a lot of the early 80s stuff about Whoops Apocalypse lets it down for me. There are a number of features above it that I just don't like. I think the cast and the writers have done better work elsewhere, perhaps, than on this show.
It has its moments. I'll mention again the DC Comics stuff that they tie into there is quite something. And I'm actually a little surprised that they were able to do that without a license from DC Comics, which I believe they did not have a license, and there were no issues or lawsuits related to that, which I guess was because it was fitting into that satire category. But we had a number of characters and named things being referenced. We had costumes there and facts about the characters and how they worked being mentioned. It gets to be, quite involved at that point near the end.
And I suppose we should mention there's quite a good Crypto the Superdog gag in one of the episodes.
Yes, absolutely. That was quite good. We get references to various villains and to the Phantom Zone, and we get three full costumes showing up with the actors running around this office, including Green Lantern as well as Superman. So it really gets into some stuff that goes into those comics, which is sort of a fun thing to have in there.
It is, yes. It's great fun in a way. As I say, I can't quite get over the scene of Jeffrey Palmer dressed as Hawkman. that will stay with me.
Yes. So I guess we should get to our recommendations, which I think in a way is a tricky one with this. But Eamon, why don't you start this one?
Okay. I'm not going to recommend Whoops Apocalypse. I think it almost redeems itself in the movie, which is a better, a bigger production and has some slightly less unacceptable features that the early 1980s TV show has. I mean, I will, of course, qualify it by saying that 1982 TV comedy was a different country, but there you go. I didn't really enjoy the series at all. I had a lot of trouble with watching it. If they'd given me the British cabinet with just Peter Jones, Jeffrey Palmer and Richard Davis and all the story about the story of the British Prime Minister who thinks he's Superman, I could have quite enjoyed that and maybe just a bit of Ed Bishop doing the news as well. But apart from that, no, I can't recommend Whoops Apocalypse. I thought it was pretty awful, I'm afraid, Brian. What about yourself? You might have a slightly more positive take on it.
Well, a little bit, but I can't really recommend this either. It has its moments. It definitely has its moments. And some of those groupings are funny. Some of them we see for too long. They're good for a little bit, but we see them for too long. And others are really just not funny to me at all. So unless 1980s comedy and this sort of black comedy comedy, if you like, of dealing with these kinds of issues. Unless that's really your thing, I wouldn't think this would be one to go to. So no, I will not recommend this one either.
Okay, but as ever, chip in on the Facebook group if you think we've got it wrong about Whoops Apocalypse, if you're one of its many, many fans.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear some comments there. So, in summary, Whoops Apocalypse brought us the American president, Johnny Cyclops, who is not particularly competent and is dealing with the deacon as his advisor. And they are dealing with the problems of the world and the Cold War and the possibility of a nuclear apocalypse that we may be leading toward. And we are also introduced to British and Soviet leaders and the Shah of Iran, who is on the run, and various groups who are trying to play this to their advantage, especially the Americans. And all of this is done to comedic effect, and all of it is leading to things going wrong and an ending where things will go very wrong indeed.
Neatly done, Brian. That's Whoops Apocalypse wrapped up for us.
There you go.
And of course, come back next time when, in, dare I say it, and now for something completely different, as we're going back to the BBC 1970 for a slice of early folk horror on television in a play for today called Robin Redbreast. And I'm actually quite looking forward to talking about this one, Brian.
Yes, this will definitely be something different to talk about. And we do occasionally get into this very British genre called folk horror. And it will be nice to dip back into that again.
Great stuff.
Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group. And we always have some good discussion going on there. And I look forward to talking about Whoops Apocalypse with as many listeners as possible there.
Yes, please do. British Invaders is, of course, a proud member of the Voice of Geeks Network. Check it all out at vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com, the Voice of Geeks.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed for listening. And until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, I'm Jay Garrick. Have a cookie.